Welcome to the Steelers by the Lake podcast. My name is James, joined once again by my co-host Cody on this tragic Monday. How are you today?
It's tragic Monday. I'm okay though. How are you?
Man.
My body hurts a little bit.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, yours too.
Yeah, I got my first COVID shot. That's a doozy, man.
Mine does not hurt because of that.
It feels like somebody hit me in the arm with a sledgehammer. Oh. But hey, you know, it's all to protect others.
Yep.
So that's good. Sure. Anyway, I'll tell you who's not protecting anybody. That's the offensive line for the Steelers.
That's true.
Holy crap, man. But before we get too far into that.
Yeah, before we get too far into that. So obviously, I mean, you all know by now, Pittsburgh lost to the Bengals. We'll get to the sadness of that in a minute.
It's awful.
But Pennsylvania, as a whole right now, is losing this month in downloads to Ohio.
For our podcast.
For our podcast. Of course.
Don't take two L's, Pennsylvania.
No, we can't take another L.
For crying out loud, tell some friends to download the pod. There's only a couple days in the month left.
Just
gotta do it.
Just start sharing it with your other... Listen, there are more of you Steeler fans in Pennsylvania than are listening to the podcast right now. I can guarantee that because there was like 50,000 some fans or whatever at the game, and majority of them were Steelers fans.
This is all true.
Yeah.
So. It's all true.
We're waiting for more downloads from Pennsylvania. That's all we're saying. Thank you. So I don't know. That's all I have to say.
Also waiting for some new players to join the team, like Taco Charlton.
Taco Charlton was signed before the game to the practice squad.
That's very true. Former first-round pick of the Dallas Cowboys. They actually chose him over T.J. Watt. Ha!
Suckers. Listen, I will say this. I am excited to potentially have someone else on the defense that can apply a little bit of pressure. Hopefully Taco Charlton can bring that if he gets to play. You know, obviously they send him to practice squad, but if he comes up to the active roster. We saw it this week. We saw what happens when you can't apply pressure.
It's
not good.
Yeah.
It's not good at all.
It's a death warrant, man. Pretty much anybody's going to pick you apart if you can't get after the quarterback. That's for sure. Speaking of guys that are intended to get after the quarterback, Isaiah Bugs was the projected starter at nose tackle, as we assumed would be the case.
Yep.
With Tyson Alualu out for the year and Carlos Davis still struggling with a knee injury. The Steelers then chose to protect four players on the practice squad like every single week, with those players being Taco Charlton, Carl Joseph, Jalen Samuels, for what reason, we do not know.
Nope, no clue.
And then outside linebacker Derek Tuzka.
Yep. I don't know why they protected Jalen Samuels unless they're still potentially trying to get something in a trade for him down the line. I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah, and you can't trade somebody on a practice
Correct.
Squad anyways.
It doesn't make
bring
sense
him up
to
and
me.
Then, and who's going to trade for a guy that's been on your practice squad? I don't know, man.
I don't know either. Hayden, Bush, Watt, and Highsmith were all out with groin injuries. All those guys being on the defensive side of the ball.
Which is scary.
Very scary. And then Big Ben also had the left pec injury going into this week's game. They clearly didn't stop him from playing in the game, but he was dealing with a pec injury.
Yeah, which basically what he said is the only time that was going to be a factor for him in the game is like if the ball was snapped to the left of him, like a poor snap, and he had to stretch way out for it. Or if he had to pick himself up off the ground, which was a clear shot at his offensive line for not doing so.
Yep.
After game two when he was hit and not helped up off the ground.
Multiple times.
Yeah.
Not a good look for the offensive line.
Yeah. That message was received loud and clear by the offensive line as far as picking him up.
Yep. They had ex-players yelling at them basically and calling him out.
Yeah, Trey Essex was very vocal on Twitter about his complete, utter disdain. You search his Twitter account, you'll find it pretty quick. The language is not one that I'm willing to repeat on our podcast.
Fair enough. Also, Steelers, we talked about last year with the big Hall of Fame, obviously with the year prior as well, and then this year, all the Steelers that got into the Hall of Fame. We also have five nominees for the Hall of Fame class, which is the modern era Hall of Fame class, to be specific. You have Hines Ward, who has been there multiple times. Heath Miller, the tight end, the great tight end, Heath, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Casey Hampton, Hardy Nickerson, and Gary Anderson, all nominated for the Hall of Fame.
Now, this is five guys that have been nominated in a class of, at this time, 125 nominees. So it does mean something, but don't think that this means all five of these guys are getting in.
Nope.
In fact, probably only a couple of them realistically maybe even two. Have a chance. Yeah,
maybe two.
Yeah, that's kind of where we're at. Obviously, Hines has made it into the second round in this previously, so he does have a shot.
I think this is Hines' year. I genuinely feel that.
I'm not convinced. I also haven't seen who the players are this year.
That's fair.
From other teams, there's usually some serious marquee names that you look at it and say, well, shoot, out of these 25 guys, there's about nine of them I can see getting in pretty easy.
True, very true.
Which makes it difficult. I think Casey Hampton will have a shot, too. He is a five-time Pro Bowler.
Yep.
So that's somebody that should have some consideration. Unfortunately, as much as we love Heath Miller, he just doesn't have the resume that some tight ends have. So I think it was, what, only two Pro Bowl appearances for Heath Miller?
Yep.
It's going to make it tough for him to crack that that Hall of Fame. Hardy Nickerson, I believe, also had five Pro Bowl appearances, although I think more with Tampa Bay than he did with Pittsburgh.
Which will still count for the Hall towards the Hall of Fame, but just less of stuff happening with us.
And then Gary Anderson was an excellent kicker for the Steelers, but again, I think only went to the Pro Bowl a couple times. So although he was the Steelers' all-time leading scorer for a long time, I don't expect him to get in necessarily. Yeah. So.
Yep. My money's on Hines, Ward, and Casey Hampton this year.
Yeah, I just want to see what the next round brings, you know? True. How many of them make it past the first round? Hopefully at least two with Hines and Casey Hampton. It'd be neat if he got into the next round, too.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we'll see where that brings us. As of Friday, so 2 days before the game, the injury report was that Carlos Davis was officially out with his knee injury. Deontay Johnson also out with his knee injury. Alex Highsmith out with his groin injury. And then Saturday, we found out that T.J. Watt was ruled out with his groin injury as well, which was just awful to hear that both starting outside linebackers were going to miss the game.
Yeah, that's big bad news. So that obviously led to us elevating Derek Tuska to the active roster, as well as the injury to Deontay Johnson. We also elevated Cody White to the active roster. Cody White was with us all preseason. We get to see little sparks here and there from him.
Yeah, and Cody White was on the practice squad last year as well. So it's a guy that's been around the team for a couple years now with some experience and ability to play in different positions. Bigger guy, too, for a wide receiver. I want to say he's like 6'2", 215.
Yeah.
So good size on Cody White there.
So that's going to be all the game or all the news leading up to the game, all the pregame news. We're going to go ahead and talk about this game. Again, neither of us really want to talk about this game. Actually, we kind of did it all day today at work. but it was pitiful, to say the least. I think that is my definition of that game.
Yeah, one of the things that Pittsburgh's been struggling this season so far is their ability to move the ball on first down, and right out of the gate they struggled with it. Early on in the game, penalties absolutely crippled them. In this game, they had four first downs that they lost due to penalties. Two of them on long runs by Najee Harris.
Yep.
And when you're talking about having a difficult time establishing the run game, I thought Najee ran a lot better. He broke off three or four good-sized runs, and two of them get called back because of penalties. And it's not even like I can look at it and be like, oh, the ref screwed us on those. Both of them were legit, like, holding penalties. Yep.
And the worst part, in my opinion, was, if I remember correctly, all those holding calls weren't having, like, those players weren't having an immediate impact on the play. They were either to the far right or far left or away from the hole that Najee was running through. So, first off, you're stupid for holding. Second off, don't hold when it doesn't impact the play.
Yeah, situational awareness huge here. And honestly, a lack of discipline. I thought the offensive line really let both the running game and the passing game down big time in this game.
Oh, massive time.
And it's tough just because I know there's so many young guys and they're still trying to gel together. But it's the repeated mistakes here that are starting to make you question how far can this team go. They've got to start gelling on this offensive line, or it's going to be a long season.
Yeah. And again, me and you both said, you know, they won't start gelling together until week 5 or 6. We're getting close. I didn't expect them to be quite this bad. I didn't expect that. Yeah. And then obviously, we'll get into this later, but you have Chooks go down with a concussion. Kendrick Green get injured to the knee. And then you have two backups in. Your only backup tackle and one of two, I think, backup inside linemen. You're running out of bodies there fast.
Yeah. Yeah. We really got to hope, honestly, that we can get some guys back off injured reserve soon. This is just going to be so important to this season turning around. Not only the lack of pass rush, but the lack of quality blocking on the offensive line. You have to assume a guy like Zach Banner, if he were to be able to come back healthy, is really going to help bring the physicality back. He's really an emotional leader, a vocal leader, and a guy that I don't think is going to take things laying down. So I do believe that when Zach Banner comes back, it's going to be kind of a shot to the arm in a good way for the whole offensive line. But also the same on the defensive side. If Stephon Tuitt can come back, all of a sudden now you've got two killer interior defensive linemen and rushing the passer, and it's really going to make things easier for everybody else around. Right now, I mean, in this game, you had one guy that could rush the passer effectively. That's Cam Hayward. Nobody else did a good job rushing the passer. And even Cam struggled because he had so much attention on him.
Yeah. Yeah. When you lose your top three, if you include, well, I shouldn't say top three, but if you lose three of your top starter, four starters on the, I'll just say on the defensive front.
Just the pass rushers.
Yeah.
Call it what it is. Your top three are your top four pass rushers.
Yeah. Because we don't have Highsmith. We don't have Tyson Alua. We don't have Stephon Tuitt. We also don't have Tyson Alua. That's beside the point. And then we don't have T.J. Watt. You have three of the four guys. Cam Hayward can easily get double-teamed by most teams now if they have even semi-good offensive linemen. And the Bengals' offensive line is fairly decent.
Yeah, they were at least strong enough to withstand his power and not be pushed back too badly, which is really a big part of Cam's game.
Yep.
And he didn't have the space to work to get things moving. So I think one of the most important things is going to be keeping an eye on the injury list this week. With all those guys that went on to injured reserve at the beginning of the year, they're all eligible to come off now. It's about what is their health at? Where is their health status? Are they healthy enough to come back? If so, Tuitt and Banner could save the season in my book.
Yep. Yeah, I could see that as well. Now to go into like the positional breakdown like we always do. Big Ben. The problem I had with Big Ben, other than he didn't have enough time to throw the ball. I understand that. We also forced the ball to be thrown too quickly. But I also understand that when you don't have time, you kind of have to. But Ben threw for 58 passes, 58 attempts.
It's too many.
That's way too many for someone who's still, he's not young anymore. Like, that's going to take a wear and tear on his body, on his arm, on his throwing ability. And then the two interceptions he had, one was sure he got hit when he threw it. It kind of went up in the air, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
it
was a great pick. Yeah.
It was a great pick.
That one was bad luck and a great play on a very lucky bounce for the Bengals.
Yeah. The second one.
Whole other story.
He stared down the receiver, and then he literally watched as the guy was triple covered anyways. And then he threw it, like, literally immediately to the defender's hands. I haven't seen Ben this year, minus the Deontay Johnson touchdown pass, throw a more accurate pass to a player than that defensive interception. And it wasn't our player.
Really,
I will give Ben credit for that Deontay pass.
Yeah,
but
that was a hell of a pass.
But just poor pocket presence, poor awareness, poor decision making. Even a sack that he took, he was well outside the pocket, could have easily thrown the ball away, and decided to hang on to it and take a sack. And even one of Tyler Boyd, the Bengals, talk too much away from Ben Roethlisberger right now because we're doing the positional breakdown, but Tyler Boyd said Pittsburgh gave up. And yeah, I think we did.
It's tough to hear, but at the end, it kind of looked like some of the receivers gave up. They were dropping balls and almost not caring that they dropped the ball.
They were demoralized.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that comes down to the fact that obviously they weren't getting anything going, but I think it comes down to somewhat play calling. And James and I have had extensive discussions on this I agree with James with what he'll say after this, but I think the majority of the problem was the play calling, because you're literally calling plays where Ben gets the ball out of his hands in 2 seconds. Back to what I said last week, we are spreading the ball width-wise. We are not extending the field depth-wise. We're not doing enough deep balls. I think maybe Ben threw two or three over 15, 20 yards down the field. That was it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a game where he did not try as many deep shots as he had in previous weeks. And you have to wonder if some of that is not having Deontay Johnson, who seems to be his favorite target at this stage in his career. But, you know, I still attest that a lot of this too is just not being able to utilize the tight end position as much, and just the offensive line not protecting Ben well. I feel like he steps back and he's just waiting to get hit now. He just knows it's coming. He doesn't have faith that they're going to hold up. And most of the time he's right. So it's tough because you need time to hit these routes that are further down the field. But I almost feel like Ben's not even giving chance for the other routes to develop. As the game went on, you could sense his frustration, and he was just checking it down to Najee time and time and time again.
Yep.
Najee was interviewed after the game and quoted as saying, "Not a single one of those plays was designed to go to me. I was the check down every time." And he had 14 receptions. He literally tied third place in Steelers history for receptions in a single game, and they were all check downs. That is not good, man.
It's not good at all. And again, I don't like how it looks, because I do agree it's the offensive line not giving Ben enough time to throw the ball. But I also think that we're not utilizing our receivers enough to get open downfield. I think everyone's running short routes or short out, like, you know, these little short routes, and they're easily covered, which forces Ben to check the ball down.
Yeah, and then Ben almost seems to be making a decision before the play. You know, he might have two people that are running deeper routes, but he's going to the short guy no matter what.
Yep.
And the defense knows he's going to do that. In fact, the very last offensive play Pittsburgh had, the Bengals went into what they called a curtain front, where they ran everybody right up to the line of scrimmage. This then had the hot read for the Steelers of throwing that quick pass to Najee Harris. He's the hot route on that. And they backed out of it as soon as the ball was snapped, because they knew that Ben would panic and just throw it to Najee.
Yep.
That shows you that the game plan's got to change. And speaking of the game plan needing to change, I'm going back to this because this irritated the living bejesus out of me.
Oh, here we go.
Yes. Second offensive play of the game. Now, you know at this point in time, if you don't know, I'm going to tell you. The Steelers during the week write a script of the first 20 offensive plays. This is how everything goes. If it's perfect scenario on the first offensive drive, sometimes that'll bleed into the second or third drive as well. But the second play of the game is now for sure a scripted play that you drew up before the game earlier in the week. And what do we get called for? An illegal formation. We drew up a play that was illegal. And it was part of the original script that is just complete neglect by the coaching staff. That no one realized that beforehand. Like, how do you not realize that?
Because you know they practiced that all week, which means they lined up the same way they lined up in practice.
Yeah. Yeah. And everybody said, later on, seems
later
fine.
On in the course of the game, you might have a play that's not lined up correctly, but a second play of the game is scripted the way that James is saying. And they lined up the same way they lined up in practice. That's horrible. And I genuinely don't like that our offensive coordinator sits up in the booth. I don't like that either. That's his own personal thing, but I don't like it.
Yeah. Yeah, I
don't know. It's clearly not giving him a better view of the field.
He might have clearly a good view of the field, but it's not calling any better plays, that's for sure. But yeah, overall, I felt like Ben is getting a little more blame than he deserves from this game. Just being that one of those interceptions is definitely not on him. But also, there's some no defending him. When he missed James Washington on the left-hand side of the field, I want to say it was in the fourth quarter, Washington had two steps on his guy and no safety help.
Would have been a touchdown.
Yeah, Ben hits him. It's an easy touchdown, and he overthrew him by like 2 yards. And maybe some of that is just that he doesn't throw to James Washington as much because he's your number four wide receiver. He's more used to Deontay and Chase, and they're a little bit faster. But you know, regardless, the man's open. You got to hit him.
Yep.
It was painful watching Aaron Rodgers last night. Every time a guy got a step or two on his defender, he hit him perfectly. And I'm just like, why can't Ben do that? Ben used to do that.
Ben has lost it. And I'm saying that because I said it in a text to James during the game. I don't think Ben has it anymore. I think Ben can still play. I think Ben can still lead us and help us win games. I don't think Ben has it anymore. And to clarify, I'm not saying Ben can't get it back. I think a lot of this comes from a feeling demoralized, feeling just completely abused, and feeling like you can't trust anybody. You have guys like Eric Ebron dropping pass after pass after pass. He dropped another one in this game that would have been a decent gain. You have the offensive line that can't guard or pass block for you for more than 3 seconds.
Yeah, if they make it to 3 seconds, it's a really good play for them.
It's a great play.
Which is awful. Back to your Ebron, too, not to interrupt you.
Yeah, no.
He has one reception on the year and 3 or 4 dropped passes.
Yep.
He had 3 targets in this game, 0 catches. If you had like a 3rd or 4th string tight end that was doing this, you'd consider dropping him and bringing somebody up from the practice squad. At this point in time, I don't know what the point is. I don't get the point of running him out on the field.
And I'm going to say this right now, now that we're talking about Ebron. I think Pittsburgh has failed in their trades of recent, to clarify. The last good trade we had was for Minka.
That was a
phenomenal trade.
Great trade.
The trade for Ebron was trash. Oh, no, he signed Ebron.
Yeah, he was a free agent.
Okay, excuse me, never mind. That free agent signing was trash. That's okay. But I still think the signing of the trade for Joe Schobert and the trade for Witherspoon were bad trades.
I mean, they didn't give much up, but you gotta...
But those are future offensive linemen that we need.
That's the problem. That's the problem. You know, that's positions that you need. After watching a game like this, you're thinking you might need to draft a couple offensive linemen again. You're probably going to have to draft in the secondary.
We need a new quarterback.
Going to need a quarterback at some point.
Because Mason isn't the future. Sorry.
And you're going to need a number 2 tight end to back up Pat Freiermuth. And there's all these positions that are starting to pile up, and you're trading away all your picks. So something's got to give at some point in time in trading for guys that are barely rosterable or you're not even going to have active on game day, like Akilah Witherspoon.
Yep.
Is starting to make you scratch your head a little bit.
A little bit. All right, again, Ben threw for 318 yards, 1 touchdown, 2 picks. Not Ben's best game by any means. I think we halt the abuse to Ben there. He had enough in the game. I don't want to demoralize the man anymore. Not that he listens. But, again, I still feel that Ben can improve from that and get better. I think he needs to start trusting the people around him again. I think they need to earn that trust a little bit more.
They do need to earn it.
So, moving on to the running backs. Only one got a carry. You can't... Ben ran for 5 yards.
Listen, one run for 5 yards. Way to go, Ben.
Good job. You had the best average of the game. I clap for you, sir. But Najee Harris, 14 carries, which is a good number, not a bad number, only 40 yards.
Yeah, and again...
He had phenomenal runs that kept getting called back.
There was at least 2, if not 3, 10-plus yard runs that were called back due to penalty. You just have to play cleaner football. That's it. You know, they started to get a rhythm. They started to get the running game going, and then penalties destroyed the momentum. You can't shoot yourself in the foot over and over and over and expect to win games. It just doesn't work that way. But I did feel like Najee, when you're talking about his running, anytime you have 3 or 4 runs over 10 yards in one game, that's a good game. Now we got to get to the point where the offensive line does not commit penalties to get these called back.
Yep.
That's
basically it for the running game.
That is.
But
yeah.
To keep on the theme of Najee, if we go to receiving, Najee led the team in receptions.
Yep.
14 receptions for 102 yards. That's great. I love that if there's a balance, and if we're getting some touchdowns.
And I'm not even mad at Najee for the ones he didn't catch.
No,
cause
not at all.
By then, he's just exhausted because the ball is going to him every play.
Yep.
Yeah, and what are you going to do, bring in Benny Snell to catch the ball? It's probably not going to work well.
Nope. And you don't have much after that. I don't think you're going to want to put Ballage back there to catch the ball. I'm not saying these guys can't catch the ball.
It's just not their forte.
No, not at all.
But you need to spread the ball around to the receivers a little bit more. Now, Chase Claypool put together a nice game with 9 catches, 96 yards. And you know what? In the end of the game, you could tell that he was hurting. He was hurting pretty bad. Rumor is it was cramps, but, you know, he'd go down in one play and be back 2 plays later and then go down again. And he'd get his catch and he'd get yards and he'd move the chains and then just take a play off just so that he could get out there and be healthy enough just to play one more play again.
Yep.
So I thought a very, very tough, gritty performance from Chase Claypool. Again, he had a drop near the end of the game, but at that stage in the game, there wasn't enough time to win.
No, and everyone was very, very down, very demoralized, as we've said multiple times. Ray-Ray McCloud, 3 receptions for 33 yards. Juju, 3 receptions for 25 before going out with an injury. Pat Freiermuth had his first drop of the day, which I was very sad about.
More importantly, his first touchdown of the season.
His first touchdown. Which I'm mad about it. I called it too.
Yeah.
I did. I told my buddies that I was watching the game with. I was like, "This."
I called it on our pod last week.
Oh, you did. I called it. I called it in the moment, which is funny because I called it the last 2 times he scored. I just need to start calling Pat Freiermuth touchdowns every time. Maybe it'll keep happening.
Yeah, you should.
But I liked the touchdown. I didn't like the play call. Again, I don't like the play calling most of the time, but I hate those tight end screens, because when we run that play, Ben almost could have thrown a pick on one of those plays earlier in the game, but luckily he didn't throw it and he just took the sack. But we don't run anything else out of those plays.
Not yet.
We've ran this play for 4 years now. We used to run this play with frickin' Hines Ward. Like, we need to start running that formation, that play, and do something different out of it. Otherwise, it's going to start leading to turnovers or just nasty hits on our guys. It's not going to end up well. But again, Pat Freiermuth, great job with your first touchdown. It counts now.
This one counts.
That's all I thought about the whole time. But James Washington, 3 receptions, 20 yards. Cody White, 2 for 2, was targeted twice, caught 2 balls. And Derek Watt, 1 for 1. Those are the only 2 guys that caught everything that was passed their way. Granted, you know, people probably weren't guarding them as well because they didn't expect them to get the ball, but whatever.
But you know what? Cody White, to his credit, took a pretty hard hit on the one and shrugged it off and got some more yards.
Mm-hmm.
Derek was kind of like almost a center screen play to him. He caught it. He played at least, I want to say, 5 or 6 offensive snaps, which I thought is a move in the right direction. And one thing that I did like to see that they finally did, which I haven't seen since the years of Will Johnson being the Steelers fullback, they lined up in a base offense with running back, fullback, tight end, 2 wide receivers. And they said motion, and everybody lined up as a wide receiver.
I love that. I saw that.
That's great. That's how you get mismatches.
Yep.
That's what teams are doing to us and have been doing to us for years now, to get linebackers matched up on wide receivers. It's about time we do the same thing to them to create mismatches and get their linebackers matched up on our running backs. Yep. Get their linebackers on our wide receivers and get our running backs in a situation where they're one-on-one with corners and can run them over.
You just led me to something that I've been thinking about, but I haven't, it's been a thought in my brain, but I haven't had the words to describe it, which is going to sound really dumb because it sounds really clear and basic, but it's just how my brain works. I feel like Pittsburgh's operating 5 years too slow. I feel like we are playing an offense that would work 5 years ago, but it doesn't work now. Teams play differently. Teams play better. Teams have better schemes on defense to counteract the things that we're doing. Pittsburgh is playing the same way they played 5 years ago. And it's annoying. Granted, they're just not doing it as well. Literally, that's it. And I want to see something change. We've gone through, I think, 3 offensive coordinators in that time. Maybe only 2. Might have been only 2. But I want to see something change. I want to see something different. I want to see us go out there and be different and make plays and not be afraid to take shots, because that's the only way we're going to win games. You don't see, listen, any of these teams that, the Raiders that are 3-0, the Packers that have now won 2 games this well, this last game wasn't decidedly, but Aaron Rodgers put on a show. These teams with these good quarterbacks are not afraid to take shots, and these good wide receivers. I don't think our wide receiver core is any less talented than Green Bay or Arizona. Or these guys have, again, bigger ceilings. I talked about that. I think Devontae Adams is a better receiver than anyone we have. I think DeAndre Hopkins is the same thing. But our receiver core and the depth, we need to make plays. We need to do something.
Yeah, and one of the things I was disappointed with from this game is that, you know, one thing that we saw a struggle of Mike Hilton's when he was with the Steelers was when he was matched up in the slot and they sent a vertical route, a go route down the middle of the field or something that started on the inside and then he had to chase somebody outside. That is the kind of route that he is highly susceptible to due to a lack of speed. We should have been taking advantage of that all game long, and I didn't see it.
I
think they did it to Ray Ray once. Once. And that was it, man. It just wasn't enough. That's a matchup that you could have used and abused all game long and instead was hardly done at all.
Yep. So, again, that Eric Ebron, 3 targets, 0 catches. I don't have to say anything more about that. Yeah. That's all I have to say. If we move to the defensive side of the ball, actually, no, let's go offensive line. Let's not skip them.
Yeah, they need to be talked about.
They sucked. All of them. I don't think anyone had a really good game.
Maybe Trey Turner.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. Trey Turner might not have had as bad of a game as everyone else.
Yeah.
But it wasn't pretty by any means. It just, it almost seems like they haven't even practiced together is what it looks like.
Yeah, and that's part of the problem, I think, right? Because they didn't get a chance to practice together until the very first week before the very first game.
Yep.
And now it's starting to fall apart with injuries. You know, if Okorafor can't come back, now all of a sudden you got Joe Hague starting at right tackle, which is a little scary. They'll have to bring somebody up from the practice squad because there are no more tackles on the offensive 53-man roster right now. And we'll see what goes with Kendrick Green's knee. That didn't look too bad, so hopefully he'll be able to go. But I don't know that you want to see Hasenauer starting.
Nope.
So it's starting to get a little worrisome, and really, really hoping Banner can come back soon.
And really hoping that the guys just, again, I don't think our offensive line is untalented, or lacking of skills or assets. I think they're just, for the most part, young.
Yep.
Minus Trey Turner, and they aren't in rhythm, and maybe they should have been playing more in the preseason. Maybe they should have been practicing more. Maybe they should be hanging out together more. I don't know what the answer is, but the way they're doing it now is not working at all. So I still think we will see the offensive line play noticeably better by the end of the year. I'm hoping that it comes before, you know, midseason. And we just have to wait and see, unfortunately.
Yeah. It's gotta. If it doesn't get any better, it's gonna look a lot worse real soon. So let's move to the defense and talk first defensive line. I thought one of my biggest concerns going into this game, I talked about how Pittsburgh had to find another person that could rush the passer from the interior defensive line, and they didn't. They didn't. You know, there was a lot of Loudermilk in this game, a lot of Wormley in this game. Bugs, you didn't see him rushing the passer much. But even Mondo got in on the game. And nobody got after the quarterback. Not a single quarterback hit in the entire game.
Nope.
No. So just have to, whether it be scheming stuff up or just better effort, we got to see more from these guys. Otherwise, you can't expect it to get any better until Tua comes back from injury.
Yeah. The outside linebackers, we obviously, again, were out TJ Watt. We were out Alex Highsmith. You had Melvin Ingram starting, who's new to the team this year. And you had, even Derek Tuska, who just got signed, who made some plays or played, I think 29 snaps total.
Yeah. And Jameer Jones started an undrafted free agent. Just not the cast that you're used to. And I got to be honest, I feel like Melvin Ingram had his worst game as a Steeler thus far. I know we're only 3 games into it, but I really felt like the first 2 games he looked really good in this game. I had a much different perspective of it. Unfortunately, really should have had a sack that would have made a big difference on Joe Burrow. Both he and Jameer Jones beat the offensive tackle, and I felt like he kind of made a selfish play just trying to get the sack himself. Had he maintained his side of the quarterback, one of the two of them would have got him.
Yep.
But instead he gets juked out, and in getting juked out, took out Jameer Jones. And now you got two defensive linemen trying to get him an open field, and Joe Burrow's a quick guy. And that didn't work.
Nope.
And so you got to remember, team ball, when there's two of you, use both of you to get them. You got to make sure you get them. It's not about being the glory man. And then later on in the game, Tyler Boyd catches a pass over the middle. Melvin Ingram just lowers a shoulder into him, does not wrap him up, does not tackle him. Tyler Boyd just bounces off and goes right into the end zone like 10 yards later for a touchdown.
Yep.
Just wrap him up. Like, just not a great performance from Melvin Ingram
and
today.
Both of those things were bad, but, and not to say that the sack, missed sack opportunity was bigger or worse or whatever. You know, he also allowed a touchdown. But this game snapped the longest sack streak in the NFL history. That Pittsburgh was on. Pittsburgh had
75 straight games.
75 straight games.
1,800 days since their last game without a sack.
Exactly 1,800.
2016.
Yep.
It was 2016.
Really sad to see that one go.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know.
Could have had it.
Should have had it. They did have it. Yeah. They dropped it.
Yep.
Dropped the ball, figuratively and kind of literally. Mm-hmm. Moving on to middle linebackers, we got to see, obviously, both the two starters in with Devin Bush and Joe Schobert. Devin Bush was kind of quiet that game, almost like he wasn't even there, in my opinion. I feel like I didn't even see him. And then Joe Schobert, I think Joe Schobert, you know, he led the team in tackles, sure. I am not impressed again at all with Joe Schobert. At all.
I felt like it was a better game than the previous
game.
Yeah,
but I still feel like it was trash.
Still nothing. Yeah, not a $10 million man.
No. Again, I think a horrible trade Pittsburgh had, unless something different changes moving forward. You probably didn't really see anything else from middle linebackers for the rest of the game.
No,
it was
didn't
just
even,
those two.
I honestly didn't even feel like they stuck out on special teams.
No.
At least Derek Watt got involved on special teams, you know. But yeah, just kind of a rough game for the linebackers, and I don't feel like it was much better for the corners either. The only pass breakup by any corner was James Pierre, and not till the end of the game. Otherwise, he seemed to struggle a little bit again.
Yep.
Which is rough. Probably best play of the game by the defense would have been the interception by Terrell Edmonds, which was a result of a tipped pass by Micah Fitzpatrick.
And when the best play on defense happened from Terrell Edmonds, it's typically not a great game.
Not
just
always.
Saying.
Yeah.
Well, minus the one game he had two picks.
That was pretty
that
good.
Was a good game. But that was because they had everyone else on lockdown. You had to go to him.
Well, you got to give the man credit. Last week you talked about him having a good game. He follows it up with an interception. You did say last week you wanted to see some turnovers from him.
I did say that, and he did.
Terrell's listening to you, buddy.
Terrell, listen, I want to see two more turnovers. I want to see I want to see a pick and a forced fumble recovery.
Terrell,
you talk
to your boys. Tell them to help you out there, man.
We need something to change.
it's getting brutal.
It's getting very bad. The most tackles on defense from the secondary came from Arthur Millette with three. Minkah Fitzpatrick had three, and as well as an assist. Just didn't see a whole lot from these guys. Cameron Sutton seemed to be out of place a lot. Joe Hayden got beat for a touchdown.
Looked lost on the play.
Very lost. and that's showing that, you know, maybe like what James talked about earlier in the year, maybe Joe Hayden lost his step. Maybe he hit that brick wall that's like, you're not getting any better than this. It's time to slowly get worse.
Yeah, and you hope that's not what's happening with him. But again, a lot of that, too, is they say rush and coverage go hand in hand. If you have no pressure on the quarterback, he just sits back there, and eventually receivers will get open. You can't ask people to cover receivers for forever. So,
moving on to special teams, Boswell missed a field goal, sadly. Very sad. Boz still for president. He made the next one, and he was 1-for-1 on extra points. I think Boz, along with everybody, I think everyone just was feeling very in a funk that game. Everybody. Even Presley Harvin, only his longest punt was 50 yards.
Wasn't that one Boswell missed pretty long?
I believe so.
I thought it was a long kick.
Yeah. I mean, that drive started at Pittsburgh's 24. They only gained 37 yards before that missed field goal. So it was pretty long. But again, still not like Boswell to miss those field goals. PH3 again, four punts for 40.5 average. Only had one inside the 20. Raymond McLeod had one kickoff return and one punt return for 22 and 14 yards, respectively. Nothing too big and shining from the special teams. Even on, again, on the defensive side of that, either. Derek Watt had, you know, a good trip up almost. They didn't give him the tackle for it, but he kind of got down there and made a play. Not a whole lot to talk about on special teams, unfortunately.
No, and at least they didn't give up any big plays. That's a positive, I guess. But
yeah,
the game wasn't close enough for special teams to win it for them, that's for sure.
That is for sure. So now time to move on to next week. We're going to talk about the Green Bay Packers. We're going to go over their lineup here real quick before we go over our three keys of success for beating the Packers. James will go first. I will go second. And then we have our winner from the comment section, Nick Pretzel, here with us, who's going to give his three keys to success against the Packers as well. So, first to go over the lineup, quarterback Aaron Rodgers. Well, I'm just going to drop it right there. That's all we need to talk about.
Yeah, hopefully he has a bad game. That's all he can say. If you don't get some pressure on Aaron Rodgers, he'll tear you up. So
yeah, we need T.J. Watt or Alex Highsmith or both.
Preferably both.
To come back.
Maybe Tua, too.
Maybe if Tua wants to come back and say, hey, that'd be great. Like, let's be real. Running backs, Aaron Jones, A.J. Dillon backing him up. Aaron Jones is a phenomenal running back. Hasn't shined as much this year as he did the past 2 years. But again, Aaron Jones is a beast. Wide receiver core, James?
Devontae Adams with Marquez Valdez-Scantling, Randall Cobb, Alan Lazard. These guys put up numbers.
Yeah, and Valdez-Scantling is like 6'4", 6'5", and blazing fast.
Yeah, and Amari Rodgers, the rookie out of Clemson, right? So there's a lot of ability there as well. So he's got a really good receiving core, which he's not always had.
No, and even in the tight end room with Robert Tonyan and Mercedes Lewis, both those guys can catch the ball as well.
Yeah, and Tonyan really a little bit more explosive probably. Lewis a little more of a blocker at this stage of his career. But they've got weapons. They can move the ball. They score a lot of points. So if Pittsburgh can't figure out the offense, it's going to be a rough one.
And their offensive line gives time for him to throw the ball as well. Yep. With Elgton Jenkins, Lucas Patrick, Josh Myers at center, Royce Newman and Billy Turner rounding up that front five. Decent squad. Probably, it could potentially be the best offensive line we've played this year.
Yeah, Elgton Jenkins really having a good season so far at left tackle there. So, going to be important that we get some healthy bodies back rushing the passer to try to combat this offensive line there. Now, on the defensive side, one of the better safety duos, probably the best safety duo that we will have gone against thus far this season.
Yep.
With Adrian Amos and Darnell Savage.
Yeah, both very talented guy. Adrian Amos, both a ball hawk and a big hitter. Darnell Savage, well, it says right there in the name, he's a savage.
Yeah, and he's fast as heck, man.
Yeah, and then you go to the cornerback room, and you got Jair Alexander, who is a playmaker, probably, I would say arguably, just as good as Tre'Davious White. Pretty close.
Yeah, a little shorter guy, though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Then Kevin King, your tall beanpole, who has been torched many times by many people.
Let's keep torching him.
So let's see how this matchup goes, you know. If we can get Deontay Johnson on Kevin King and Chase Claypool on Jair Alexander, I like the matchups. So you've got to try to find a way to scheme the mismatches that you're looking for in this game. Don't just let them get their tall guy on your tall guy and their quick guy on your quick guy, or it's not going to help you any.
No, not at all. The linebacker core, inside linebackers, Chris Barnes and Devondre Campbell, both decent linebackers. I don't think either of them are, like, phenomenal.
No, but definitely not.
But they're both fairly decent guys. You got Preston Smith on the outside with Rashawn Gary as well. Guys that can apply pressure, but not consistently, I don't think. These aren't guys that you're going to be get against our offensive line, who knows? But these aren't guys that you're normally going to expect to get multiple sacks a game, so nothing to worry about there. The biggest threat, I think, on their front is Kenny Clark at the nose tackle.
Yeah, and Kingsley Keke is no slouch himself.
That is fair.
But yeah, the front three in Dean Lowry, Kenny Clark, Kingsley Keke, some guys that can get some push, so.
Very much so. And then obviously the kicker, Mason Crosby, we all know.
That's a good kicker.
The punter is also the holder.
Yeah. Yep. How weird.
Whatever. Punt returner, Amari Rodgers. Kick returner, Kylan Hill. And then long snapper, because you can never talk not talk about the long snapper, Got per on. James. Hunter Bradley. Don't know who he is. Hopefully he snaps the ball a little high once or twice.
just aim above Corey's head for me, all right, Hunter? Thanks.
That's all we need. That's all we need. So moving on now to our three keys to success. James, after you.
Well, this is probably going to be a little predictable. Number one, the offensive line play must improve.
Shocker.
This is going to be not only just from a technical standpoint, but a penalty standpoint. The discipline also cannot commit that many penalties that are drive killers. Expect to have a good game. Number two, we must get after the pass rusher. I don't care how. I don't care if it's blitzing defensive backs, getting creative with stunts, or just having people come back from injury. Really hoping to hear that Stephon Tuitt can come back from injury. If not, Henry Mondo, chug about 5 Red Bulls before the game, young man, because we're going to need you amped up, buddy. And then my final one is, once again, establish the run game. I think they made some strides in that category in this week.
Yeah.
Gotta continue it in the right direction so that you can give the defense some rest in between your series. Get some of those longer 7-8 play drives and allow the defense to be fresh for the next game.
All right. I like those top three. Your top three keys to success. That's what we're calling them. My top three. Number one. James is not going to be surprised by this because I've been talking about it nonstop.
What, Dwayne Haskins getting promoted?
The play calling has to be better on offense. You cannot, continue to pass the ball 3 yards down the field or behind the field, like behind the line of scrimmage. You have to move the ball down the field. You have to scheme players into mismatches. We talked about it with the one play where we lined up two running backs, two wide receivers, and a tight end. You have to scheme someone else into that situation to get a mismatch and then force the ball downfield. I talked about it last week with extending the field vertically, not just horizontally. It's what you have to do. So I'm going to say key one is playmaking. Key two is the offensive line needs to at least get on the same page. I don't even care if they're going to suck. They at least need to get on the same page. Listen.
Just get all your holding plays at the same time.
Exactly.
All 5 of you hold them. Get it exactly. out of your system.
It's that thing where they call the penalty a false start, everyone but the center. I don't know.
Yeah.
And again, I joke about that a little bit. But here's the thing. If the offensive line can get on the same page, they won't have to hold because they'll be able to pass players off better. They'll be able to understand where they're supposed to be. It's almost just understanding the plays better. Because maybe that's why they were holding. Maybe they were out of position. Maybe they blocked the wrong person or thought the wrong person was blitzing. They need to be better at that, which will lead to both improved passing and run game. And then the last thing is, and I want to talk about turnovers, but I'm not going to. That was my one for last week, was win the turnover battle. I think that's important, but that's not my key. My key is we need to disrupt Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers is a pocket passer. He's had those plays where he scrambles and makes crazy Hail Mary passes. That's fine. But I want to see him disrupted. I want to see him uncomfortable. I want to see him hit. I want to see him hit very hard and let him hit the ground gently. I don't want to see any roughing the passer calls that aren't roughing the passer calls because that happened this past game.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying we need to sack him. I'm not even saying that. I just say we need to make him uncomfortable. Those are my top three. Nick Pretzel, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's good to be here. I'm always here. I'm Cody's roommate. Anyway, so... what I'm going to say is not very different from what you guys have been saying, and part of that is probably, again, because I'm Cody's roommate, and we're both Steelers, and we'd like to talk Steelers football. My number one, which is basically what you guys were saying, but I worded it a little differently, was go after the secondary. You guys talked already about how they've got some good guys in there, Darnell Savage and J.R. Alexander, however you say his name. But on the other end of the cornerback spectrum, they're kind of lacking a little bit. You see guys in there like Kevin King, like you said, but also behind him, if he's not having a good game, all they've got is Eric Stokes, the rookie out of Georgia, who hasn't really proven himself at all yet, and I don't think we're going to see a lot of elite play out of him. So I think that could be a huge matchup for either Deontay Johnson or Chase Claypool or whoever they decide to throw out on that side there. Secondly, again, improve the offensive line play. We saw too many plays where Ben didn't have enough time to get the ball out and it was a short dump to Najee. We saw too many moments of him escaping the pocket and doing next to nothing or throwing an interception or getting tackled by doing a little spin move that was, can you even call it a spin move at this point?
He did that.
So there was just, I think there's a lot of lack of leadership, like you were saying, because we've got so many young guys or we've got so many new guys. And so the O-line just looks so new. And like you said, they need to get on the same page before we're going to see any more of those deep passes allowed that will allow us to go after the secondary, that will allow us to have bigger splash plays, that will also keep the defense off the field for a little bit to rest and recuperate, especially when you don't have guys like TJ Watt or Alex Highsmith out there who are going to win those one-on-one matchups and also free up guys like Melvin Ingram or Cam Hayward to also make big plays like they did against Buffalo in week one. And then my last one is catch the dang ball. I know we talked, or you guys talked a little bit about it with Eric Ebron, but also, you know, Najee and Pat Freiermuth having their first couple drops of their careers, and other guys too out there just not catching balls that are placed like right in their hands. So I know there were plenty of balls thrown this week by Ben that were less than catchable, but the ones that were, you just really want to see those guys catching those footballs and making the plays so that we can, you know, move down the field a little bit and not keep punting on fourth down.
Yeah, after three plays.
Yeah.
Three and out. Yeah, so thanks, Nick, for joining us on the podcast. Next week, we are actually going to have another Nick. We decided to pick two winners, basically the only two people that commented and tagged people. Nick Van Noord is going to be on the show next week, so look forward to that. We will have to Zoom call him in as he is not from us. And then the following week, we are going to have another person who commented as well, Josh Perry.
Yeah, Josh commented on our Facebook feed, which we're going to accept that.
We will. We said Instagram, Josh, it's okay. We will accept the Facebook one. If you guys have any desire to ever get on the show, please feel free to DM either James or myself or even the Steelers by the Pod, Steelers by the Podcast, Steelers by the Lake podcast page on any of the forms of social media that we're on. Again, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or TikTok. We'll have you guys on for just about anything. Even if you just want to talk about a play or something you noticed, we really want to try and get our fans more engaged. And again, we look forward to hearing from you guys. Message us, even email us at SteelersByTheLake@gmail.com. We look forward to hearing from you guys and talking more Steelers football. So again, thanks for joining. Thanks for listening. Be sure to like and follow on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at Steelers by the Lake. And until next time, this is your host, James and Cody, signing off.
Peace.